should also.
No, I guess that's good. Inspiration. So, Shiva Maharaj, he's proposed that we, he's going to do. And I said I would propose what he's going to do, and then I would propose a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, and I would give everyone the choice of which one we would do. I thought that was inspired. He wants to do with his group to everyone involved went back. I asked him how did his session go, and he said it took a lot of work to keep everyone else talking. But he didn't. He said he didn't answer any questions. So I guess it went a little bit different to some degree. And but he wants to get everyone involved and ask everybody to speak about what does Bhagavad Gita mean to them. What it means for us, yes.
Individually.
Everyone to speak and then let there be some discussion about it. And he says that doesn't carry through the whole session, then he wants to go further and read the last, like, four or five main verses of 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Manmana Bhavamad Bhakta. These verses of the Bhagavad Gita. So that's what he's doing. And my other proposal, I have a particular verse that I really like from the Bhagavatam. We could discuss this verse, but again, I'm going to push more for discussion and less of my involvement as much as possible. From the verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, although I did like your verse, I had another verse in mind. And that was a verse from the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, 2nd chapter, it's the Prayers of the Demigods, which the demigods are praying as follows. O Lord, who resemble the shining sun, you are always ready to fill the desire of your devotee, and therefore you are known as a desire tree, Vanchakalpataru. When acharyas completely take shelter under your lotus feet, in order to cross the fierce ocean of nations, they leave behind on earth the method by which they cross, and because you are very merciful to your devotees, you accept this method to help them. Which I like this, Prabhupada talks about in the 10.231. Prabhupada talks about what the acharya leaves behind and how the instructions the acharya leaves behind becomes the boat to carry everyone else across to achieve the same destination they achieve. So that was my verse that I had selected. But we can go either way. I would, and I told Maharaj that personally I would be more inspired. He asked what would inspire me more. I said I would be more inspired by what inspires you more than what inspires me. So do either of you have choices? I mean, do any of you have choices, preferences of which Bhagavad Gita to discuss? What does Bhagavad Gita mean to you? And then continue by the last verses of the 18th chapter, or to discuss this verse in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. First, Bhagavad Gita. Mm-hmm.
According to my opinion, it is more useful if the lecturer speaks on.
But this is not supposed to be a lecture.
Okay,
but Maharaj, if you are inspired by this Bhagavatam verse, we get more kick out of it, I'm sure. So why not go verse?
I had selected this verse before I heard Shiva Ramaraj's proposal.
Uh-huh.
It's not like I'm not inspired by Bhagavad Gita. Don't get me wrong.
This is a wonderful verse. If you don't mind, I suppose.
Huh?
Personally, I would incline for the verse.
And there are so many layers.
Okay, so the first is Bhagavad Gita, and second is this verse.
What?
10 to 31. Who wants this verse? We're missing some people.
Hopefully they come
preparing for the evening language.
Cabaret or
comedy.
But I thought that was Bhagavad Priya and
Chaitanya Chandra.
Oh, they'll be here in 5 minutes max.
I have my bag somewhere. Those little sausages. I don't know where they are.
Okay.
If you see them on the table somewhere.
Yeah.
They were on the table. Okay. Everyone? Except? Oh, you have something to look on?
Yeah.
Everyone is open to the verse?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Could someone else read it? Maybe? Rana, can you read it?
The Sanskrit?
Read the Sanskrit and then read the translation.
Svayam samakriya sudustaram jivunam hava navam bhimam adapram sopita havat padam puruha navam aprate mithayayata sadanurak bhavam. Svayam,
the words or just the translation? You can do the word for word translation.
Svayam,
Svayam,
personally.
Personally.
Samuttirya,
Samuttirya,
perfectly crossing,
perfectly crossing.
Sudustaram,
Sudustaram,
which is very difficult to cross,
which is very difficult to cross.
Yuman,
Yuman,
O Lord, who appear exactly like the sun illuminating the darkness of this world of ignorance.
O Lord, who appear exactly like the sun illuminating the darkness of this world of ignorance.
Hava Arnavam,
Hava Arnavam,
the ocean of Nisayas,
the ocean of Nisayas.
Bhimam,
Bhimam,
which is extremely fierce,
which is extremely fierce.
Adapra Sohrida,
Adapra Sohrida,
devotees who are incessantly friendly to the fallen souls,
devotees who are incessantly friendly to the fallen souls.
Havatpada Amburuha, your lotus feet.
Your lotus feet.
Navam.
Navam.
The boat for crossing.
The boat for crossing.
Atra.
Atra.
In this world.
In this world.
They, the Vaishnavas.
They, the Vaishnavas.
Nithaya.
Nithaya.
Leaving behind.
Leaving behind.
Yataha.
Yataha.
On to the ultimate destination, Vaikuntha.
On to the ultimate destination, Vaikuntha.
Sat Anurakha.
Sat Anurakha.
Who are always kind and merciful to the devotees.
Who are always kind and merciful to the devotees.
Bhavan.
Bhavan.
You.
You.
Translation. O Lord, who resemble the shining sun, you are always ready to fulfill the desire of your devotees, and therefore you are known as a desire tree Vanchakalpataru. When acharyas completely take shelter under your lotus feet in order to cross the fierce ocean of nisayas, they leave behind on earth the method by which they cross, and because you are very merciful to your own other devotees, you accept this method to help them.
Look at this commentary.
Perfect. This statement reveals how the merciful acharyas and the merciful supreme personality of Godhead together help the serious devotee who wants to return home back to Godhead. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his teaching to Rupa Goswami, said, Ramananda Ramamide Kona Bhagyavan Jiva Guru Krishna Prasade Paya Bhakti Lata Bija. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhyalila 19.151. One can achieve the seed of Bhakti Lata devotional service by the mercy of Guru and Krishna. The duty of the Guru is to find the means according to the time, the circumstances, and the candidate by which one can be induced to render devotional service, which Krishna accepts from the candidate who wants to be successful in going back home, back to Godhead. After wandering throughout the universe, a fortunate person within this material world seeks shelter of such a guru or acharya who trains the devotee in the suitable ways to render service according to the circumstances, to that the supreme personality of Godhead will accept the service. This makes it easier for the candidate to reach the ultimate destination. The acharya's duty, therefore, is to find the means by which devotees may render service according to references from Shastra. Rupa Goswami, for example, in order to help subsequent devotees, published such devotional books as Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Thus, it is the duty of the acharya to publish books that will help future candidates take up the method of service and become eligible to return home, back to Godhead, by the mercy of the Lord. In our Krishna consciousness movement, the same path is being prescribed and followed. Thus, the devotees have been advised to refrain from four sinful activities: illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling, and to chant 16 rounds a day. These are bona fide instructions. Because in the Western countries, constant chanting is not possible, one shouldn't artificially imitate Haridas Thakur, but should follow this method. Krishna will accept a devotee who strictly follows the regulative principles and the method prescribed in the various books and literature published by the authorities. The acharyas gives the suitable method for crossing the ocean of the science by accepting the boat of the lotus feet, and if this method is strictly followed, the followers will ultimately reach the destination by the grace of the Lord. This method is called Acharya Sampradaya. It is therefore said, Sampradaya Vihina De Mantraste Nisphala Mata of Padma Purana. The Acharya Sampradaya is strictly bona fide. Therefore, one must accept the Acharya Sampradaya, otherwise one's endeavor will be futile. Srila Narottam Das Thakur therefore sings, Tandera Charana Sevi Bhakta Sena Vas Janame e janam, janama, janame janame haya e avilas. One must worship the lotus feet of the acharya and live within the society of devotees. Then one's endeavor to cross over the science will surely be successful.
Anyways, I felt this was really, it's relevant. It's inspired. I don't have to be inspired. It's already inspired by Prabhupada's ecstasy. And it's relevant in the sense that it really helps all of us
to focus on how we collectively, in our eagerly attempting to stay in the boat that Srila Prabhupada left behind for us to cross. And his definition of the boat, which is given in his commentary, is leaving behind books, leaving behind instructions, and leaving behind the method that they themselves followed by their own example and have already crossed. So I'm in an attempt to avoid at least starting this discussion by giving my own presentation. I think the first thing I would like to do, since it's a very relevant topic to all of us, is to ask devotees to please express their own realization and what this verse and commentary means to them. Any volunteers? Oh, you came in too late. Phew. Yes, Madhupati?
I can only analyze the English translation, but this is good enough, I think. And there are some.
Yes,
some
it's
words.
Interesting. Interesting how Prabhupada translated it also, but go ahead.
Yes, yes, and the word by word translation and the complete translation has some interesting discrepancies but or differences, but I don't think I can comment on that. But what I would like to comment is on one word in the second sentence. When acharyas completely take shelter under your lotus feet in order to cross the fierce ocean of nescience, they leave behind on earth the method by which they cross, and because you are very merciful to your other devotees, you accept this method to help them. So the word I would like to stress is completely. So this is to me, this is a very, very significant word, because it says that the acharya is a special person also, because he gives an example of complete surrender. So I can only speak for myself, but I'm still struggling to surrender, and I know that the effect is not the same if one is just half surrendered. But this is a very important thing, because when acharyas completely take shelter, then they get actually supernatural abilities. Mm-hmm. So they are empowered by completely surrendering. They are empowered by the Lord, and actually the Lord puts the seal on the method by which they cross the ocean.
Can anyone seal think of any references which would help us to confirm what you've just stated from Shastra?
Well,
how this complete surrender empowers the acharya to carry the weight of the entire disciplic succession, as well as the Supreme Lord himself?
I think Bhagavad Gita has a few points, the Sarvadharma Parichaya verse or Evam Parampara Praptam.
Yes.
They come up. I'm not such a scholar, so.
Anyone else?
First verse, nectar of instruction.
The what now?
The nectar of instruction, the first verse.
Very good. Pachuvegna manasakodavi. That's very good. Some other verse? There's one verse Prabhupada used to quote so much. Anyone know? The first to sink your time.
Mm-hmm.
Shambhari. It refers to potencies that one gets, called Shakti. Kali Kalyana Dhamma, Krishna Nam Sankirtan. Krishna Shakti, Vina Nahi, Tari Pravashana. Anyone know this verse? Kali Kalyana Dhamma. Fundamental religious system in the age of Kali is Sankirtan. Unless one has been empowered by the Supreme Lord, it's not possible to spread it. Well, you don't know the verse. Prabhupada used to quote that verse so often.
Where is that verse, Maharaj?
Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Chaitanya Charitamrita,
yeah. Chaitanya Charitamrita. You should know this verse. Yeah? Prabhupada would quote this verse many, many times.
Mancha 7? 7-11.
Kali Kalera Dhamma. Oh yes, Krishna Nam Sankirtan, Krishna Shakti Vinayana Tari Pravatan. In other words, empowerment is it's sort of like the point that I was mentioning yesterday about making decisions and inducing or the invoking the Lord's participation in the decision, so that the decision is an inspired decision as opposed to mano retena, which was in the verse that Maharani was suggesting that we speak about from the Bhagavatam, yasyasti bhaktir bhagavachi kinshina savayaginas tatya samasate sura harava bhaktasya kato mahatana Manoritenasati davatovihi. Manoritenasati. Manoritena. Manoritena means the chariot of the mind. Prabhupada translates it as mental speculation. And that verse basically says that those who are driven by mental speculation, who make all their decisions on the platform of mental speculation, they have no good qualities. So, obviously, the acharya is one who doesn't impose any of his speculations upon his followers. Because he's empowered, that means he has the blessings of the Lord to establish the means by which his followers can cross the ocean of material nescience, I think is how it's pronounced, at least. That's how I've always pronounced it. Nescience. Yeah. Nescience. Yeah. Although it looks like Nescience. It's Nescience. So, that can only be achieved according to your commentary for those who have completely taken shelter. Otherwise, if one has not completely taken shelter, they'll still be driven by their own, potentially can still be driven by their own. And Prabhupada makes a very important point in this connection. He was using it for his own example, but it's out of his humility. He gave the example of the difference between a conditioned soul and a liberated soul. And he says that normally one has to accept the spiritual master from the liberated platform. He said, but he was using the example that empowerment means, and he gave the example of a mechanic. He says, if I don't know anything about being a mechanic, but if I strictly follow someone who knows, who's a mechanic, then I'm as good as a mechanic. Mm-hmm. And he said, the same way, he said, I may not be liberated, but when I strictly follow the liberated soul, then although I am not liberated, my activities are as good as liberated because I'm strictly following liberated souls. He used that, of course, out of his own humility. But again, that also gives a very good understanding of what it means to be completely under the shelter. It means that one's strictly following. And strictly means, in so many places, when Prabhupada defines strictly, what does it mean? Can anyone tell me what three things are required to be surrendered, to be strictly following? Many verses, Prabhupada adds this even to the verse. For complete surrender is three things.
Mind, body, words.
Thank you. Yes. Body, mind, and words. Yeah. Completely surrendered or completely sheltered. And Prabhupada, reason why he quotes that is he refers to Rupa Goswami's verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Anyone know the verse? Maharani, you know the verse? Begins with Iha. Which means?
Fully surrendered by words.
And
we get
of
actions and
we call someone a liberated soul, even in this body. Someone surrenders the body, mind, and
essentially that's something. It. Yes. He's already liberated, even though he's in the material body. Mm-hmm. He's already liberated soul. Because his body, his mind, and words are engaged in Krishna service. So that's our understanding of completely sheltered. And many verses. In 7th canto, the verse of Prahlad Maharaj probably talks about how even a person who's born as a dog eater, anyone know this verse? Is considered to be better than a Brahmin? Huh? No, not Ahobata Svat Pacho, but that's another verse. Ahobata Svat Pacho Togariyon. That's the third canto of Bhagavatam, the stable Bhutti. She says that anyone who's, even if he's taken birth, Ahobata Svat Pacho Togariyon. Vijay Varta Tigamatu Yanti. What's the possibility? Yes. Even if one is born in a family dog eater, but if his tongue is decorated with the holy name, he is considered to have already visited all the places of pilgrimage, to have all the qualities of the Aryan civilization, and what is it? Anyways, he's fully qualified, even if he's Svapacho. Is that the verse you're talking about? Yeah. There was another one, seventh canto. I'll look at. I want to find it because it's bothering me. It's a wonderful verse, this verse that says even if one is born in the family of dog eaters, he is considered to be more advanced, more elevated than a person, a Brahmin, who perfectly follows all the Brahminical principles, because his body and his mind and words are engaged in Krishna's service, even if one is born in a family of dog eaters. Are you looking it up? Or are you just typing something?
I'm looking up.
Did you find it? Seventh canto. If you look up dog eater, I think it will.
Yes.
I'll find it. Okay, I found it. It's 7, 9, 10. If a Brahmin has all 12 of the Brahminical qualifications, all 12. Anyone know what the 12 qualifications for a Brahmin are? This is a real test. Well, we can discuss that afterwards.
We don't know, but we possess it.
Very good.
Humility is the first one.
It's like the residents of the spiritual world, they don't know how exalted they are. If a Brahmin has all 12 of the mythical qualifications, as they are stated in the book called Sanat Sujata, but is not a devotee and is averse to the lotus feet of the Lord, he is certainly lower than a devotee who is a dog eater, but who has dedicated everything, mind, words, activities, wealth, and life to the Supreme Lord. Such a devotee is better than such a Brahmin, because the devotee can purify his whole family, whereas the so-called Brahmin in a position of false prestige cannot purify even himself. Yeah.
And it was in the present tense, who is a dog eater?
In present tense. But again, this is another one of Prabhupada's fantastic, you know, renderings. I was looking up just recently. I had found a Prabhupada in one of his commentaries. He had rendered 5 verses of the Bhagavad Gita in his own words. He had rendered them in his own words, not the translation. And when I read it, it was so enlivening the way Prabhupada rendered it, because it was just so, like, it was brilliant. It was poetic. And Prabhupada does that. He doesn't give a literal translation, but he's a kavi. And I looked up, and actually, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta actually referred to Prabhupada as kavi. There's a reference in the Prabhupada Lilamrita. And a characteristic kavi, a poet, is that he can actually take something and render it in a different way, but doesn't lose the meaning, but it becomes more poetic and more relishable. So Prabhupada utilizes his poetic skills, you know, and sometimes the scholars, they object to Prabhupada's, they don't like it, they think that, you know, Prabhupada has taken too free a license to render the verses, some of the verses, not all the verses, but to render the verses in a way that doesn't strictly follow the literal translation of the word for word of the Bhagavad Gita. But actually, if I had the connection to the internet, do I have a connection to the internet? Wait a minute. I'm connected to something. I asked them, is there an internet connection here? They said, no. Because I would like to find, I did research on this, I'd like to share it with you. It's so nice. If I can connect onto my site.
I can bring a stick, a mobile stick.
For Mac?
Not so interesting.
Find out.
For the Mac,
yes.
I have my computer. I can find just as well.
I can tell you.
Is this yours? Right here?
Yes.
iPhone?
Yes.
Oh, so you're giving me a connection.
Yes.
Poach. Poach. Poach means to steal. Poach it. Steal your connection.
0587.
Okay. Thank you. I don't want to digress, but I'm not really digressing. It really is right on this verse. You know, because this verse is like, it's just all Prabhupada, this verse. Prabhupada made the boat. Not only did he use the boat, but he made the boat. Krishna blessed the boat. Krishna took Prabhupada in that boat, and Prabhupada sent the boat back for everyone else who loves his boat, which is his rendering of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the boat. That's the boat, and that's what the whole commentary is about. So it's really right on the verse. That's why I'm so eager to read it, to share it with you. Okay. I have to get into my site.
Do you have connection lines?
Yes, I have a connection.
Okay.
Okay, here it is. I wrote a blog. I won't read his rendering. It's lengthy. If I read it, I may lose you. But I'll read some devotees were trying to figure out why I was so. I wrote a blog, and the blog was. The title of the blog was Wonderful, Simply Wonderful.
Honeyball.
I get wonderful. And you know, and I put the reason, I put what was simply wonderful. And people were writing in saying they couldn't catch it. What is it? Is it because Prabhupada said this? Because Prabhupada said What can you tell us? What's wonderful about it? They couldn't catch it. Although I alluded to it, but I didn't really spell it out. So I wrote in my next blog. I said I was informed that there were some questions posted in the comments section of my previous blog. Oh, maybe I did say something in my previous blog. Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Wonderful, simply wonderful. Yeah, I put the whole thing. It's wonderful. Can I read it?
Please,
can
I read it? Please.
Yeah, okay, it's just really. Simply wonderful. I wrote, here's my first blog. Today I was reading this wonderful purport in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 2nd chapter, 6th verse. Within the context of the purport, Srila Prabhupada rendered verses 151 through 155 of Chaitanya Charitamrita in the most beautiful way. These were Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Srila Rupa Goswami, which include the often quoted verse, Brahmanda Brahmate Kona Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Bhij. These verses were cited in reference to Uddhava. When Vidura met Uddhava, he inquired about Lord Krishna. Upon hearing his inquiries, Uddhava immediately remembered the Lord and became so absorbed in transcendental ecstasy that he forgot all about the external world. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, and this is Prabhupada's words. Even though a pure devotee is present on this mortal planet, he is here in relation to the Lord for engagement in transcendental loving service and not for any material cause. A living entity can live either on the material plane or in the transcendental abode of the Lord in accordance with his existential condition. The conditional changes of the living entity explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and the instructions given to Srila Rupa Goswami by Lord Sri Chaitanya. And then here is Prabhupada's rendering of these verses. It's long. You have to know the verses. You're familiar with the verses? Brahmanda Brahmate Kona. You know, everyone's familiar with that. Anyone? Not familiar with Brahmanda Brahmate Kona Bhagavan Jeev?
This is here.
It's there.
This is here.
The purport.
In the purport.
Oh, it's in the purport.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Well, it makes it even better. Oh, wow. The living entities all over the universes are enjoying the effects of the respective fruit or results of their own work, life after life. Out of all of them, some may be influenced by the association of pure devotees and thus get the chance to execute devotional service by attainment of taste. This is not in the verses itself, not the little Prabhupada's actually just rendering it. It's what he does. He says he gets the chance to execute devotional service by attainment of taste. This taste is the seed of devotional service. And one who is fortunate enough to have received such a seed is advised to sow it in the core of his heart. As one cultivates a seed by pouring water to fructify it, the seed of devotional service sown in the heart of the devotee may be cultured by pouring water in the form of hearing and chanting of the holy name and pastimes of the Lord. The creeper of devotional service, so nourished, gradually grows, and the devotee, acting as a gardener, goes on pouring the water of constant hearing and chanting. The creeper of devotional service gradually grows so high that it passes through the entire material universe and enters into the spiritual sky, growing still higher and higher until it reaches the planet Goloka Vrindavan. The devotee gardener is in touch with the abode of the Lord even from the material plane by dint of performing devotional service to the Lord simply by hearing and chanting. Mm-hmm. I mean, as a creeper takes shelter of, as a creeper takes shelter of another stronger tree, similarly, the creeper of devotional service, nourished by the devotee, takes shelter. In other words, as one takes, a tree, creeper takes shelter of a stronger tree. This one. It's so quiet over there.
Didn't know if I was disturbing.
Similarly, the creeper of devotional service, nourished by the devotee, takes shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord and thus becomes fixed. When the creeper is fixed and the fruit of the creeper comes into existence, and the gardener who nourished it is able to enjoy this fruit of love, and his life becomes successful. So that's Prabhupada's rendering. And then I ended my blog saying, wonderful, simply wonderful. And then people were writing questions, what is it about it? What's so wonderful? Because they thought there was something, you know, that was... But my point was that Prabhupada's rendering of those verses, which is different than the actual literal translation of the verses, was so wonderful. And then I wrote in the next blog, where is it? What was it that I found so wonderful in Srila Prabhupada's rendition of the five verses Lord Chaitanya spoke to Srila Rupa Goswami? The answer is as follows. One of the 26 qualities of a Vaishnava is that he is poetic. Srila Prabhupada told us that when he submitted his first speech in English to the harmonist, along with the English poem he had written as a Vyasa Puja offering to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada was immediately recognized by his godbrothers as a competent writer in English, and many of them even began calling him Kavi, or learned poet, which is godbrothers. Also in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antyalila, 195, first chapter 195, 196, in his conversation with Lord Chaitanya, Ramananda Roy praises the wonderful poetic description written by Rupa Goswami as follows. Quote, what is the use of a bowman's arrow or a poet's poetry, if they penetrate the heart but do not cause the head to spin. Without your mercy, such poetic expressions would be impossible for an ordinary living being to write. Simply put, I was overwhelmed by Srila Prabhupada's poetry-like rendition of the following five verses. He had translated differently in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then I gave those verses. So Prabhupada does that in so many places. He renders it. And this verse that we're reading today is one such poetic rendition. If you look at the word for word and you look at how Prabhupada rendered it, there's a lot of... additional words. And that's what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be analyzing the verse and actually even trying to understand why did Prabhupada render things in that way. So look, I don't need the connection anymore. If we can go back to the verse. Would anybody like to make some comment? Or extract something else from this verse? That
you were reading?
Yes, the verse. The verse, because I justified reading of what I just read because I really felt it was really connected to the verse itself, which really Prabhupada, being the acharya, the boat he constructed and which was blessed by Krishna, was not only the books. His books, of course, are the basis. His books are the basis. Preaching is the essence. Facility is the principle. Purity is the force. And he not only gave us the boat in the form of his books, which he alludes to in his own commentary, that Rupa Goswami left Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu as a boat, but he gave us the institution, which was like the boat, with so many instructions as well for all of his followers to follow, so that would enable them to stay within the boat. Prabhupada also, he has a very interesting analogy about boat. And I'm going to stop talking here because I'm going to try to get more people to talk. Prabhupada gives an analogy about a boat. He said that sometimes it is seen that a devotee in his effort to cross the ocean, he has to undergo so many disturbances in crossing the ocean. He said, just like crossing the ocean, there'll be so many disturbances. And it almost may appear that the devotee is undergoing some severe karmic reactions in his efforts to cross the ocean. And Prabhupada gave the example. He said, when one has crossed the ocean of the boat, he says the boat may be influenced by the waves. He said, but it's not that one is in the ocean. He said, one is in the boat. And therefore, he says, although one is in the boat, he may be influenced by the waves as long as he stays in the boat. He'll get across the other side. So in the same way he says that a devotee, he's not in the ocean of material nature, but he's influenced by the modes of material nature. Just as a person who's in the boat is influenced by the waves. But there's a difference between being in the waves and being in a boat influenced by the waves. And he uses that analogy. Even more important, why we have to stay in the boat. And not jump ship and find ourselves in the waves without a boat to carry us across. Any other examples about boats? One can think of. There's other examples from the Bhagavatam.
Yeah, right in the beginning.
What's that?
Right in the beginning.
We have accepted you.
Yeah, it's a
That's right. So. Others? Examples?
Samashutaya Padapada. That verse.
For
those who accept Krishna, then for them the material existence, the ocean of material existence, shrinks to be the size of a calf's hoof print.
Water in the calf. Water in the calf.
Yeah, water in the hoof.
Very good verse. Other?
There's another verse, Tatyana Kampamsa Sankshana. It also talks about if someone understands his position and his previous karma that he's suffering because of that, that he can be patiently waiting until he gets rid of this, knowing that he will be inheritance of what is given to him.
Anyone else? Comments about this verse? It's supposed to be relevant to everybody, not just to me. Comments? Questions? No, not questions. That's what I have to ask you. It's supposed to go there. Yes?
Well, I always have comments on anything and everything.
Okay.
Actually, these are just some thoughts about the verse. That in the beginning, it is said that what you like, kalpavriksha, like a desire fulfilling tree, and of a devotee. So fulfills the desires of a devotee. And then I became really happy. Wow, that's great. He will fulfill maybe my desires if I'm a devotee. And then we read the next sentence, and then it is said, well...
Who is a devotee?
The first word is, if an acharya, and then it continues, and then, oh my, again it comes, and again the completely, the word completely is again there, so...
Yeah, but there's more to this, but go ahead.
I was thinking about Prabhupada in regards to this, because when we read Prabhupada's Lilamrita, then we can see that Prabhupada he had such a strong desire to fulfill his spiritual master's instructions. And he was waiting 40 years to be able to achieve something. Well, he achieved quite a lot of things before that, but then it was really ripe, and the fruits were coming, not before that. It is not written here when will that desire be fulfilled. So the time factor is not written here. So it's like the devotee could have a desire, and then sometime later, when Krishna wants, it will be fulfilled. If the time is right. Otherwise, he could have the desire to live happily and die happily with that.
Yes, but by the mere fact that the devotee has firm faith that the desire will be fulfilled, he's ready to wait 10 million births. Because he has such firm faith in the words of the Lord that, I mean, the example I often think of is Mukunda. You know, he asked, he said, when will my desire be fulfilled? When will I see Lord Chaitanya again? And look, it's Chaitanya Bhagavan.
10 million years.
Huh? 10 million births. He said that rascal, 10 million births he will see me again.
And he was happy.
And he was in ecstasy because he had such firm faith that, and all he heard was, "I will see. He will see again." And so for him, he will see again was And the Lord said it was his ecstasy. He was ready to wait 10 million births. But of course the Lord reduced it to a few moments. Because his faith was so strong in the Lord's words.
That was the water in the calf's hoof.
That's right, exactly. Yeah, the Lord, no, no, it was the drop in the in the eyedropper. But, yeah, I mean, cause that's why patience is one of the most important qualities Rupa Goswami gives for advancing in devotional service. The devotee has to be patient. He's patient, but he's always faithful that he will get Krishna's mercy. Whether it's now, 10 years from now, 100 years from now, 100 births from now. He's always... But his faith is not in himself. His faith is in the manifestation of mercy which is accessible to him. In other words, faith in Srila Prabhupada, faith in one's spiritual master, faith in Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya is the uplifter of the most fallen. Faith in the holy name. You know, and here we get to that quality of faith again. You know, because he has complete faith. The devotee never thinks that I'm too fallen for Lord Chaitanya to lift me. You know, if he came to lift the most fallen, then I fit in. There's room for me. And to think that I'm more fallen is just self-indulgent. I'm not, probably even said you're the most nothing.
Most insignificant.
So, but your point, hearing these things, you know, when the desire will be fulfilled, and who gets the desire fulfilled, you have to be very conscious of the fact that the acharya's desire is to bring us across. We're getting help. And that's why a devotee should never feel, he feels helpless, but never feels hopeless. You know, because without help, what could we possibly achieve? But we're so fortunate that we have in our lives the manifestation of Vaishnavas who actually are so selfless that they're thinking of upliftment. And what to speak of, so self, I mean, when Prabhupada wrote his prayer in the Jaladutta, he was praying, you know, let them hear your message. I have no qualifications, but only I pray that you deliver them. I mean, Prabhupada was actually, you know, putting in a word for everyone. So, you know, that's what this whole verse is about. It shouldn't be discouraging in the sense that, well, only those who are completely taken shelter, you know, get to cross. But I get help. I'm getting help. And Prabhupada even said once, what was it? He said to one devotee, one devotee felt, you know, how's it possible to go to spiritual world? Prabhupada said, don't worry, I have the key to the back door. You didn't hear that? One devotee said, how would it be ever possible I go back to the spiritual world? And Prabhupada said, don't worry, I have a key to the back door. I mean...
I was thinking maybe that proves your point that Prabhupada puts the Vajrakapatarū to the translation, which is not really in the verse.
That's right.
So it doesn't really mention the Lord as a desire tree. It just mentioned the Lord as a son. So that shows that the desire somehow appears. The devotee's desire appears in the translation, but not in the real verse.
Mm-hmm.
Is it so? Because I was really surprised why Prabhupada puts it, and even in Sanskrit. But there's no reference to it in the verse itself.
Yes. Well, why does he put it? I think we've already explained why.
That's the question.
I think he's directly inspired by the author.
Prabhupada. Then many times he's directly inspired. But a lot of times he's inspired by commentaries of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur or Sanatana Goswami in case of time. I mean, we could look at Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. Maybe there's something. I have his commentary right in front of me to the 10th canto. What did he do?
Watching all the same direction.
Oh, okay. I get nervous when I get to play silence. It's in my database.
It's your database?
I have a database, yes. Somebody gave it to me. But I can't give it to anybody because I don't have the serial number.
Okay.
Yeah, I tried to give it to Shiva Maharaj. I couldn't give it to him. Someone put it in the computer. It's got the whole new folio. It's called Rockets Folio. And it's got like hundreds of other books in there besides commentaries of the Acharyas, huh?
Is it available?
No.
So
it's only available from this one devotee. There's a Russian devotee from Moscow, but he's living in South America right now.
He does have an email address or a phone number.
He does have an email address. As a matter of fact, my computer wasn't working, and the database wasn't working one day, and I flipped out because I use this every day practically. And I wrote to find out how to get in touch with the devotee, and they sent me his email address because I couldn't even reinstall it without getting the serial number. But then I fixed it somehow. And then I didn't need the serial number, so I never got the serial number. But this is Sarata Darshini. Sarata Darshini, it's available, public. It's published. And I have the Sarata Darshini. And we can look to see if there's something in there that inspired Prabhupada to put in Vajrakalpa Taru. I'll read the commentary. This commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Usually Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, especially in Sarata Darshini, he takes words and he translates the word. He expands the meaning of specific words in the verse. So the first word is svayam. And he translates svayam as personally, indicates that the material ocean is difficult to cross for others, but no trouble at all for the devotees. Did you hear that, Shantihari? No trouble at all. You don't have to think about stop the world, I want to get off.
It's a graffiti.
Huh?
It's a graffiti.
Personally, svayam personally indicates that the material ocean is difficult to cross for others, but no trouble at all for the devotees.
One more time.
No trouble.
At all.
It just seems that way. I mean, it just seems, you know, we have to understand that what seems like trouble for us is just mitigating whatever reactions we have that are supposed to come. The Lord is actually mitigating it, and we're experiencing it because the future is always bright.
future is always bright.
The future is always bright. Because, yes, it's always bright for a devotee. It only seems right now, it's like trouble. It only seems that way. But all it is just actually eradicating all whatever residual effects from sinful reactions that are there. As long as we stay on the boat. But don't jump off. That whatever trouble that we're undergoing now is just mitigating and eradicating. And therefore a devotee is able to always look, because of his faith, look and see that the future is very bright. Because there won't be any reactions left after all these reactions I'm going through right now. And what to speak of, we deserve worse. So, no trouble at all. Just stay in the boat.
I'm boring. I'm seasick, but I'm okay.
I'm okay.
Well, I heard you were swimming today. was that preparation for jumping into the ocean?
He went swimming without a spiritual master.
Yes.
So that's Svayam personally indicates the material. I'll read it one more time. Indicates the material ocean is difficult to cross for others, but no trouble at all for the devotees. Juman. The Lord is addressed as Juman, the sun. This infers that those within whom the son of Krishna does not remain in the terrible material ocean. This infers that those within whom the son of Krishna does not remain. I'm trying to understand the sentence. Wait a minute. Let me read it first. This infers that those within whom the son of Krishna does not remain in the terrible. Oh, within whom the son of Krishna does not remain in the terrible material ocean. Doesn't make sense. There you go.
My life like this.
It doesn't make sense. Anyways, I'll read it. This infers that those within whom the son of Krishna, does not remain in the terrible material ocean of insurmountable darkness, within whom there is the son of Krishna, it seems to me, what's supposed to be saying, within whom exists the son of Krishna.
Maybe a typing.
Yeah, it could be a typo. Quote, when you shine on the sunrise mountain of prema bhakti, all darkness automatically disappears. Then easily one can cross the ocean of material missions. Notice there's no reference to Kalpa Taru. But there is, wait a minute. Navam Atra Te Nidhaya. Leaving the boat on the bank means that the devotees establish bhakti movements and then cross the ocean of material existence. By this act, others are able to cross over the ocean of repeated birth and death. Though the material influence gets completely destroyed, the devotees remain here. This is only an expression of humility in the devotees. For them, the material world is compared to the water in the calf's hoofprint, because the water in the calf's hoofprint is actually purifying and praiseworthy. In the same way, the devotee's impression that he is caught in samsara purifies the devotee of the disease of false identification and is therefore praiseworthy. Should I read that one? For them, the material world is compared to the water in the calf's hoofprint, because the water in the calf's hoofprint is actually purifying and praiseworthy. In the same way, the devotee's impression that he is caught in samsara purifies the devotee of the disease of false identification and is therefore praiseworthy. So the... actually expression of humility. For us, of course, it's reality. Sadanugraha Bhavan. Here, how are the devotees able to cross the ocean of birth and death? Because you, Sri Krishna, Bhavan, are merciful, anugraha, to the devotees, sat, and not to others. So, no reference to Kalpa Taru, Pancha Kalpa Taru. Krishna Chakrabarti Thakur. But it must be just Prabhupada's
insertion.
Huh?
Inserted it.
Yeah. Like he does in so many places. He inserted it. But why don't we analyze it? What does it mean in reference to this verse? I think it's very important analysis. To be like a wish-fulfilling desire tree. Can anybody expand on that? What is a wish? What is a desire tree? I mean, what is a? Why is Krishna known as a wish-fulfilling desire tree? I know you'll say because he fulfills all desires. But
I've heard that Krishna is forced to fulfill the pure devotee's desires. So he just cannot withhold fulfilling the desires of the pure devotees.
Well, he's forced, but by love for his devotees. It's not like a resentful force. Like when you use the word force, it almost sounds like. As Prabhupada makes it very clear in the one commentary in the 10th canto, where he said that Prabhupada is commenting on how Krishna is under the control of his devotee. And he said that we should understand that Krishna is not under the control of his devotee, but he's under the control of his devotee's love.
Mm.
Not under the control of the devotee, but he makes the point, it's the love. And because love is a very dynamic, I mean, in its true sense, love is totally selfless. So, therefore, Krishna agrees to be bound by his devotee's love. But he always has a choice. He's never forced in a sense, in the true sense, that he has no choice. But by his own choice, he likes being controlled by the love of his devotees, by his own choice. So, in the sense that Krishna, by his own choice, he likes to protect his devotee. And protecting the devotee means protecting the words of his devotees also. He likes to, in fact, there's that well-known example that Prabhupada uses, Kauntiya Patijanihi Namai Bhakti Pranashiti, when Krishna says to Arjuna, you declare it, Arjuna, that my devotee is always vanquished, because if I say it, people might not listen to me, because I don't always uphold my own, even my own words. But one thing I always do is I always protect the words of my devotees. So if you say it, they'll have to accept it. So no? Yes?
Yeah.
Yes? Anyway. So what does it mean then? Krishna is like a desire tree in connection to this verse. Can we elaborate on these things? Yes.
I was thinking that ultimately everybody is looking for Krishna. Everybody wants the things that they're looking for in this material world are only really ultimately going to be fulfilled when they have a connection with Krishna, a personal connection, an exchange of love with Krishna. So in that way, Krishna is the he can fulfill everyone's desires when he gives himself to them. So when he finally, when we convince him that we are very serious about that relationship, then that desire is fulfilled. So this way Krishna is the ultimate kind of religion to him.
Mm-hmm. Yes, would you like to add something?
Yeah, in the Bhagavad Gita we have read and we have heard it many times in classes that it's like we are not the doers, we just have a desire, and that desire is understood by the super soul, and according to our karma and according to the desire, then Krishna moves the material nature, the three modes of material nature, in a way that desire is fulfilled or it is fulfilled later.
Okay. When the karma is there so that we can have the result of that desire.
Okay. So?
So, ultimately, Krishna understands the desires of everyone, not just the devotees, and he allows or he rejects to fulfill that desire.
Yes. But what is the difference between, in this verse, really emphasizes, is the difference between those who are devotees and those who are not devotees. What is the difference in fulfilling of the devotees' desires as opposed to the non-devotees' desires? There's a difference, complete difference in the Lord's attitude towards their fulfillment. Could someone...
I think the Lord takes pleasure in fulfilling the desires of the devotee. It's a reciprocation. It's ecstatic for the Lord to fulfill the desire of such devotee like Prabhupada.
Yes, and actually, in fact, in the verse Tesham, what is the verse? Tesham nitya biyoktanam yoga kshema bahamya. Ananyas chintayatomam yajana payubhashante tesham nityubhyuktanam yoga. Baladeva Jibhushan in his commentary, no, not Baladeva Jibhushan, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary makes a wonderful point that Krishna actually relishes maintaining his devotees, just as a husband relishes maintaining a husband relishes carrying his wife or something like that. I think that's what he used, example. In other words, he says specifically that Krishna never considers his devotee's maintenance as his own personal burden. He relishes doing it. This derives pleasure. So, yes, it takes pleasure. What else?
But came into my mind that the verse says that you are always ready to fulfill the desire. It doesn't say that he will fulfill the desire of the devotee. He says that he's ready to fulfill. In the same way, the Kalpa Vriksha in the spiritual sky, they are there and ready to fulfill the desires of the devotees. But I can't recall the past time when the cowherd boys or the gopis went to a Kalpa Vriksha and asked something. And a lecture came into my mind from my spiritual master, and he's speaking about another lecture given by Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada said that Krishna is ready to fulfill everyone's desires. And he continued, but the gopis in Vrindavan, they never ask anything from him. So, maybe that's it.
I can explain this. Also, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentaries of the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam, there's a story of Durvasa Muni and Maharaj Ambarish. I will explain this. This is a beautiful explanation. But I still want to get to the point about what is the difference between Krishna's fulfilling the desires of his devotees and others. Can anyone tell me?
Isn't that that he accepts the method? They want to bring the conditioned soul. So if they create a method, and they have a real desire to that this method works, because their goal is so pure, that they want to bring this conditioned soul. Then if it is a new method, say then Krishna accepts it.
Yes, his pure devotees. Those who are fully under the shelter. But I'm talking about even those who aren't his pure devotees. Because that's more, that may be more relatable for everyone here. Well, can someone tell me what is the difference between the way... when Krishna fulfills the desires of his devotees who may not be so pure in their desires, and the non-devotees. Radharaju?
For non-devotees, he fulfills their desires by his energies, and for devotees, he personally fulfills the desires.
Uh-huh. Okay. And something more? Anything else? Little Sukha?
If a non-devotee, Krishna fulfills their desire according to their karma,
uh-huh.
and the devotees according to what is very beneficial for him to Krishna consciousness.
Or as this Bhagavatam states, he fulfills the desires in such a way that the devotee will never come back and ask for it again.
Yeah.
Huh? So there's a difference. There's a clear difference between the fulfillment of the desires of the devotee and the non-devotee. Because the non-devotee, he fulfills his... He's completely passive.
Yes.
He's completely passive. He's just witness. That's giving sanction. Completely passive. But the devotee is not so passive. He's always thinking of the ultimate interest of the devotee. So someone might say, well, why didn't Krishna fulfill my desires? And again, of course, then there's the when will it happen, or how long will it take, or, you know, how long do I have to pray to Krishna for this? Or, you know, when's he gonna? Man proposes, God disposes, but according to his. Krishna's will is supreme. He decides when, how long. So, anything else? Anybody else can think of difference between fulfillment of the... Huh?
I would just say the same thing as Radharaja.
Same thing as what?
Radharaja.
Which was?
That Krishna personally... gives the desire for devotees and indirectly for non-devotees.
Uh-huh. Even though the devotee may not... What was it? Was something about even though the devotee may not ask for it? Or is it?
May I have a...
And it's almost like you were saying, like, the devotee never goes to the desire tree and asks, you know, can I... that's what I was going to give that example of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives in the Bhagavatam, in the story of Maharaj Ambarish. Is that the Can I give that now, or are you going to ask something?
I would like to ask something.
Okay.
Does it work for small desires, but, you know, totally do not have any connection with spiritual life?
Does Krishna fulfill those?
Yeah. I have some experience, I'm just curious.
Krishna can fulfill the small desires that have no connection, but it won't satisfy us. We may think we're temporarily satisfied by it.
I'm just asking because I always had a desire to ride on Harley Davidson.
What?
Ride on a Harley Davidson.
Harley Davidson.
Ride on a Harley Davidson.
And I moved to Krishna Valley, and there wasn't too much of them. But once there was a band who came to visit Krishna Valley. These guys who, you know, the arms are more wider than my legs.
Like a motorcycle gang.
Yeah.
Hells Angels type people.
And my authority asked me to take them pictures when they arrive, and after that in the temple. And that time the office would was in the village, and I made the pictures, and I realized they will go up with motorcycle, and I'm by foot, so I was not able to take pictures of them. So I asked one of them, may I just go with you? And he was like this big.
He said, yes.
And I was sitting behind him, and I was taking pictures, and it came into my mind. I had that strong desire earlier. And I was thinking, well, Krishna fulfilled that desire. And I was quite embraced that Krishna had to deal with this stupid thing for me.
You want to say something? Go ahead.
I just want to comment. Why did he fulfill your desire? To increase your faith. So that this whole event is no longer material, it's spiritual. Does it increase your faith? Is that right? I had another experience, may I? About it. And I just want to illustrate that Krishna sometimes fulfills spiritual desires like this. That was many years ago, like 10 years ago. I was just in the first steps, taking the first steps. And I was driving to the farm very early. I left home at 3 a.m. or something. And it was I was meditating on how nice it would be if I could meet a devotee, have the association of a devotee before I have to arrive to Krishna Valley. And on the way, I was driving already off the highway, and there was a 24/7 shop, and I just stopped. I thought, why not buy some apples for the cows? I used to do that in those days, and I just stopped at this shop, and I went in, and I wasn't even conscious of it, but there was some familiar sounding music, okay, and that was in Lele. The roundabout, I'm sure you know. Yes. And I just I bought the apples, and I just saw, what an interesting necklace this boy has. And it just turned out he was reading Bhagavatam and having kirtans there. And we were just exchanging a few niceties, and then just went on. And after I've driven off, I realized, this was the fulfillment of my desire. Just like that.
Yeah. I mean, some experiences like that actually are very inspirational.
Yes. I'm still inspired.
Still inspired.
But then also, they can serve as a caution, word of caution. We have to be careful what we ask Krishna for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Caution.
Yeah, we should be careful what we ask for Krishna.
So is it okay if I had desires previously and now I go to the deities and say I'm okay without them?
There's a wonderful, the whole story of Dhruva Maharaj.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole story of Dhruva Maharaj is exactly that point. Because when the Lord appeared before Dhruva Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj was motivated by a few major things. One of them was he was motivated by resentment towards his stepmother, resentment towards his stepbrother, and even towards his father. Towards his father, he was thinking he wanted a kingdom even better than his father's. Right. Even better than his grandfather's, even better than Lord Brahma. And he had these feelings, and he was motivated by these feelings of resentment. And that's what motivated him to go to the forest and to get the association of the Lord. And the Bhagavatam explains, of course, how, and it's in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, but Prabhupada integrated it into his commentary as well, that when the Lord appeared before Dhruva Maharaj, the Lord said to Dhruva, he said Kajuva recognized him, was so grateful seeing him. And then what the Lord told to Dhruva was, you will get a kingdom better than your great-grandfathers. I will give you a kingdom. And he said, as far as your mother is concerned, your brother is concerned, he'll be killed in the forest in the future. And your mother will go in looking for him, and she'll be devoured by a forest fire. And then, after that, the Lord left. The Lord left. And, you know, and Dhruva, when he first came, he said to the Lord in his prayers, he said, I only want your association of your devotees, now that I see you. And then, but the Lord, after he left, he didn't talk anything about that. He realized the Lord only talked about my previous desires. All those desires that I had before. But he didn't mention anything about what he's going to think that I'm deceitful, that I was lying to him, that I want devotees association. He just thought of my previous desires and then left. And he was just thrown into that. And there's six verses, which is Dhruva's lamentation. He was disgusted with himself. He was lamenting with himself. Everything he felt towards himself. And of course, that lamentation was purified.
I kept a long list.
The Lord, he realized the Lord fulfilled my desire, but actually, and then he said, I've come here looking for a piece of broken glass, I found the most valuable jewel, you know. Like, but he realized after the Lord left that the Lord, when he spoke, the Lord spoke to him, didn't talk anything about the current. Only just referred to the past. And he was just totally thrown into lamentation. Of course, the Lord instructed him also about the kingdom. He said how he will rule the kingdom for, I think, 36,000 years. And then after that, he'll go to his own planet, Dhruvaloka, and how Dhruvaloka is superior and everyone. He explained all that to him. But he was still, and he was also, the Lord told him that by performance of your duties, as carrying out your duties as a king, he said that you'll never be touched by the influence of material nature. You'll always be above, beyond material nature. He did say that. But anyways, I just thought of that when you said that. That's an example in the Bhagavatam of how the Lord fulfilled his desires, but he wasn't current. He was.
He wasn't up to date.
Yeah, he was going back to say, "Okay, this is what he bothered me with before."
That was also instruction, wasn't it?
Huh?
That was also instruction, wasn't it?
That was what?
Instruction.
That was an instruction. Yes. Instruction for us. Yeah. Yes, your other question.
You wanted to continue with Ambarish
Maharaj. Ambarish Maharaj. Did you want to say anything else? Did I answer your question? I'm sorry, I got so caught up in there.
Unfortunately, yes.
I got so caught up in the example because it popped in my mind. You know, that example of Dhruva Maharaj. They're wonderful verses. You might want to read them. I can't remember the chapter. Text 33, fourth canto, 33 to 37, 38. I think when Dhruva returns home. Yeah, okay. Now, Dhruva doesn't ask, but still the Lord fulfills his desire. And that's exemplified in the story of Maharaj Ambarish. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur creates a dialogue between Ambarish, no, Durvasa Muni and the Lord, based on the verses when Durvasa Muni comes before, after he goes to Brahma, then he goes to Lord Shiva, then he goes to Lord Vishnu. And he comes to Lord Vishnu and asks Lord Vishnu, can you please, you know, somebody's following me. Can you deal with it? And then the Lord says to him, he says, I'm not under control. He said, I'm completely under the control of my devotee. I'm not independent. He says, what to speak of my devotee, even those who are devotees of my devotees. He says, I depend on them. And then in the next verse he says, the devotee is always in my heart and I am always in the heart of my devotees. The devotee is always in me and I'm always in them. So that was the Lord's answer to Durvasa Muni. And Vishwa, I can't remember the Sanskrit terminology, but he creates a dialogue based on these verses which expands on this exchange between the Lord and Durvasa Muni. And the dialogue is that Durvasa Muni says to the Lord, he says, I've come to take shelter of you. And he said, certainly you must see that I'm suffering. And you're the Supreme Lord. And please, you know, if I can't go to you, who can I go to? And the Lord said, says, I'm sorry. I can't do anything for you. Which essentially is what he's saying is, I'm not independent. I'm under the control of my devotee. And then then Durvasa Muni says, but how is it that you are the Lord and somebody's coming to you for shelter? And don't you feel? Don't you have any feelings for my suffering? And the Lord says, no. And Durvasa Muni is trying to understand, how is it that you have no feeling for my suffering? And he says, because my devotee is in my heart. And he says, the devotee, and I'm in the heart of the devotee. He says, the devotee, he takes me into his heart. And he serves me so nicely in his heart that I want to give something to my devotee. So I keep on telling my devotee, can I give you something? And my devotee always says, no, I don't want anything. So, and he said, and then he says, but I asked my devotee again, please let me give you this. But my devotee says, no, all I want is just simply to serve you. I don't want anything. He said, but therefore, even though my devotee doesn't ask for something from me, he doesn't want anything from me, is my nature. I want to give him something, but what can I give him that will be, he'll appreciate? He doesn't want anything from me. She says, therefore, I have to go into my valuable treasure house and to get the most precious item for him to give him. And that most precious item I can give him is my heart. I gave my heart to Maharaj Ambarish, and you're asking me to have a heart. If you want my heart, you got to go to Maharaj Ambarish. He's got it. And that's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's, that's his dialogue that in helping us to understand how the Lord, although the devotee doesn't ask for it, the Lord still wants to give something. So he has to give something to his devotee that the devotee would really relish. So it's not necessarily that he's giving us, you know, an inheritance. Or I mean, that too may be there. But the point that Vishwanath Chakravarti makes in Tesha Mitchit, Buyoktanam Yogeshen Bahamyam, that the Lord gives whatever the devotee needs to serve him, to come to him. So he gives whatever the devotee needs, but he also gives the most valuable gift he has in his treasure house. He gives himself, even though the devotee will never ask for it. And so in many ways, the Lord gives to his devotees, although the devotees will never ask for it. And if you look at the examples in the Bhagavatam with prayers of the different pure devotees, they're always just asking for, you know, let me take birth amongst your devotees again and again and again. In fact, I was just reading, what was it? Yeah, Lord Brahma's prayer. He was saying that, he said that, actually it was Lord Brahma's prayer in relationship to the conversation between Lord Chaitanya and Keshava Bharati. And Keshava Bharati had asked Lord Chaitanya asked Keshava Bharati, he said, please tell me, what is superior, impersonal liberation or devotional service? And he asked it because, you know, Keshava Bharati was sort of impersonal sampradaya. So Keshava Bharati said that all devotional service is superior. And Lord Chaitanya said, please explain to me, why do you say that? And then Keshava Bharati explained, he says, the reason I can understand it's superior is because I see so many examples of great exalted saintly persons. Whenever they're given the opportunity for anything other than devotional service, they always immediately refuse it and they go directly for devotional service. And he used the example just like Lord Brahma, when the Lord offered to Lord Brahma a benediction, Lord Brahma said to the Lord, let me take birth, wherever I take birth, whether it's this life or some future life, my only prayer is that someday I'll be counted as your devotee. And then he says, this is a very well-known verse, I can't remember the Sanskrit part. And he says, in some future birth, or just please engage me in your devotional service. So the devotee immediately only wants devotional service. That's all he wants. He does, although the Lord asks the devotee for something, the devotee will never ask for anything except the opportunity to serve him. So in this example of his conversation with Durvasa Muni, it's specifically because Maharaj Ambarish, when Durvasa Muni cursed him, Maharaj Ambarish didn't ask the Lord for protection. And Prabhupada explains he just naturally remembered the Lord. He just naturally remembered the Lord, but he didn't even ask the Lord to be protected. And therefore the Lord, because of his natural remembrance, just complete absorption in thoughts of the Lord as he was accustomed, because his mind, his words, his body, everything were fully engaged, his spontaneous reaction to the presence of, what was the name of the demon? Virbhadra, was it? That Durvasa invoked when he pulled out his hair. Anyways, it was just to remember the Lord. So although Maharaj Ambarish didn't ask for protection, he just remembered. And therefore the Lord gave him protection. So the Lord will give, even though the devotee doesn't ask for it. Of course, the Lord will also give, even if the devotee asks for it. I mean, there are examples like Kardamamuni, he wanted a wife of like disposition. But there is more to it than that. Men as many. Although, actually, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that Kardamuni was a whole. Okay, another long explanation. But the Lord is definitely will give without asking. Because he knows our hearts. And therefore, all the more important that we keep our heart pure. Does that answer your question? We're supposed to end at 6 o'clock.
Quarter to.
We're supposed to end at 6:15. We're already over.
It's okay.
It's just us. Oh, okay. Just oh, because of the skit. Does anybody have anything you want to add to this verse? Because desires, I mean, this is, you were known as a desire tree. And Krishna fulfills the desires, as we've heard, of his pure devotees. And however the devotee wants to serve him, Krishna will accept it. But that's actually Krishna's quality. I mean, that's the beauty of the spiritual world. Is that however, whatever way wants to serve Krishna, Krishna is ready to completely give himself completely to whatever way we want to serve him. Some would say, well, we're so limited, it's only we can only serve him as a servant or a friend or a parent or a lover. Those are the only choices? But it's nothing else. So boring. Finish it? We finish it. So we're finished, I guess, too. Okay.
No, don't
apologize. You've pushed everything in the right direction. Any last comments? Anything? Some.
Thank you.
Yes. Talking about the verse.
Actually, we spent 2 hours on the first sentence.
Yeah. It is a wonderful verse. I really love this verse.
Is this verse connected to somehow to this other verse that Dharmam tu Saksha Bhagavati Pramitam?
The principles of religion?
Yeah. So in this verse, it seems to me that not only the Lord can give the religious principles, but the pure devotees also.
Yes. Yes, and this is a wonderful verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Lord Chaitanya declares that only my devotee establishes the true principles of religion. And he gave the example of Madhavendra Puri. I can't remember the Bengali. Is it? I used to know the verse, but it's gone. When Lord Chaitanya met a Brahmin, and the Brahmin invited him to Lord Chaitanya to his home to feed him. You know the reference I'm speaking about? Ordinarily, he was from some community which sannyasis are not supposed to eat food from. Mm-hmm. But the Brahmin, he noticed that the Brahmin was really like manifesting symptoms of intense devotion. And he asked him, he said, tell me, you look like you've associated with Madhavendra Puri. And he said, yes, he came to my home once. He accepted me as a disciple, and he accepted food from my hands, from my home. And Lord Chaitanya said, yes. He said, it is the Bodhi who establishes the two principles of religion. I follow their example. And Madhavendrapuri establishes the principles of religion. Yeah. So yes, Dhammam tu saksha bhagavat. Yeah, that's also a reference to the Mahajans. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.